Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Logan Corelli as we talk about his work, hunting ghosts, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Logan Corelli with us. Logan, let's finish up on what we were talking about with the possessed objects and attachments and then get into our phone calls as well. But these attachments, I mean, you can pick them up anywhere, can't you?
You can, and really, there's no really certain way to tell that something has an attachment until, of course, it's too late and, you know, you end up taking something home. A lot of people believe that older items, antiquities, and things of that nature are more apt to be or to have attachments, but I don't know if that's necessarily so. I think it's more of things that people were attached to when they were alive, and that attachment remains after death, you know. So whether it was a toy or a house or a person or whatever, but, you know, possessed objects are out there everywhere, and or attached objects are out there, and really, like I said, you really just don't know what you're picking up. So you know, it's just, again, it's one of those other risks that you have.
You've been in a sanatorium, haven't you?
Yes, I have been in several, actually.
Not as a patient, but as...
No, not yet. I haven't. Haven't been into one for as a patient, but I did have one... that I had used it for a research site also, and it's not far from here, and it will actually be in my next book. And we had a lot of things that happened in different areas of the building. It's a huge building, multiple floors and things, but one of the more active events that had happened was we were down in the basement, and my best friend, actually, and colleague, we had noticed a smell manifest that literally moved positions down in the basement of the floor, so we were kind of chasing that for a while, and we went into one area where they had a couple of things set up, and I had a clipboard, and I was writing some things down, some readings and whatever, and I was really focused in doing it, and I had turned to my left, and I bumped elbows with her, and I was, oh, you know, I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't even know you were standing there, and all of a sudden she came out of the other room and said, are you saying something to me? And of course I turn around on my left and nobody's there, but definitely skin-to-skin contact, which I thought was really bizarre. Down in the basement, and I actually had also a little further down from where that had happened, we had a device that we used for energies that would light up, and as it had started to light up and move across the floor, I had called out to it, and it stopped.
Was it like an orb?
No, the meter that was activating it kind of went in a diagonal lights. It had lights on it that went across,
okay.
And the lights actually stopped when I said, hey. Or stop or something, and it had stopped, and then I said, you know, go ahead, and it went the rest of the way across the room. So I thought that was really interesting. I'd never seen anything like that happen before. A lot of things, I had my name be called out on a ghost box that we were using up on one of the floors, clearly by name as we were leaving. So really active place. And of course, I wrote about, you know, Waverly Hills in the book, and a lot of great things that had happened in there as well. But, you know, there's a lot of suffering in there, and, you know, tuberculosis and things like that. So it's no wonder, you know, a lot of those places still have activity and things going on in there. So, yes, very, very interesting places, sanatoriums.
And when you have investigated these places, and you try to grab some EVPs as well, don't you?
Yes, we do.
Have you had some great ones?
I have many, many great ones. The one probably that kind of sticks out is, like I mentioned before, I used to do lectures on the paranormal and things like that. And EVP was always a hot topic because a lot of people were very interested in it. And one of the houses that I wrote about in Haunted Heart of America, I had told you before I had a spirit that had said, "No, I'll get you tomorrow," at one of the houses. Well, we had caught an EVP from that house that was in German language. And I don't speak German. I don't pretend to act like I speak German, so I had no idea what this was saying. And during my lecture, I was talking about EVP, and I said, you know, we even get them in foreign languages. I got this one in German, and, you know, we were just talking about the house and different things. And after I was finished, this lady had come up to me as I was getting my stuff together, and she said, "Do you still have that German EVP?" And I said, "No, unfortunately I don't, but it's on the website." And I had given her a card, and she said, "Well, I speak fluent German. I can probably tell you what it says." And so I gave her the card and kind of forgot about it. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, she had sent me an email. She said, "Hey, you know," told me who she was, and I had listened to the EVP, and she said what it said was over and over was this, and she wrote it out like in German, and she said, if you were going to say it in English, it would just simply say, "I'm not dead, I'm not dead, I'm not dead, I'm not dead." And we found out through historical records that the man that had built that home, it was over 100 years old, his mother was French and his father was German, I believe, and he had migrated to the United States from Germany, and German was his primary language that he had spoke. So found that to be very interesting. And then, of course, you know, you always have, like I told you about the church. Mm-hmm. You know, we had got the EVP in there, and a whole lot of different things. It's one of the... I think it's one of the best pieces of evidence that we can capture at this point in our research and investigations. And like I said, I just have a library of it. In fact, one of my colleagues that I'm working with now, he's skeptical, but he's still, you know, open-minded, and he's waiting to have his experience. And, you know, we go out, and I actually had an EVP that had called him out by name and kind of startled him a little bit. So it's kind of interesting. But, you know, constantly getting... different things that come through with the voices and sounds as well. You know, a lot of people don't know that there are phantom sounds just as there are voices that we can't explain. We've gotten whistling on a video. We've gotten, you know, knocking noises. We had manifestations of coins falling into a jar in one of our research sites. Very bizarre sounds. So that's just kind of one.
What do you think, Logan, fuels these events? I mean, why are they happening? Why don't these spirits just move on?
Well, you know, one could argue, you know, that stubbornness. One could say...
They don't think they're dead?
Fear, it could be. If they died suddenly, they may not realize that they're in a spiritual way right now. Some people believe it's the fear of, you know, what's on the other side, or, you know, are they going to, you know, go to heaven? Are they going to go somewhere else, or, you know, what's going to happen? So they're maybe a little reluctant to leave. And I think some of it may just be that, you know, they don't want to, you know, leave their areas or their family or their whatever they're attached to, so to speak. So, you know, there's always been a big debate about, you know, crossing over and going to the light and to the other side and things like that. And it's kind of a fascinating, you know, area of study. But, you know, at this point, we don't know why they're still here or how they're still here. And I think that's one of the big questions we're wanting to ask them is, you know, where are you? Where do you think you are? What time year do you think it is? You know, they may still be living in their own time. We don't know. But we can say they are here. They are communicating, and in some instances. So, you know, we just don't know. It's up for anybody to guess.
Okay, let's go to the phones for you. Let's go to Andy in Norwalk, California to get things started. Hi, Andy, go ahead.
Hi, George. Great show as usual.
Thank
yes,
you,
Logan,
sir.
I had a similar experience approximately about 9 years ago. My dear friend was fighting pancreatic cancer, and it was a very difficult time for me. And this knocking, which steadily progressed, it didn't matter where I was, didn't matter where I would go, it would, like, let me know it was there. And at one point, at first I thought this could be my imagination, but I knew in my heart of hearts it wasn't. And one day I was talking to a friend next to a building, a big warehouse building, which everybody that worked there said it was haunted. They had seen ghostly figures there that scared people where they would run out of the building. So I'm sitting there talking after midnight to a friend on a job site, and what happened was in the middle of the conversation, something started hitting my hood of my little car, my Acura Integra, and it was hitting it with like a tremendous force where like something that really wanted me and whoever was talking to me would have no doubt in our minds that this was really happening. So my friend asked me, he says, what the hell was that? And I says, this is what I've been going through for the last couple of months. It's been a lot lower sound, but it was continuously following me around. So I got out of the car. I was very upset. And in front of him, I said, in the name of Jesus Christ, the blood of Jesus, go back to wherever the hell you came from and stay the hell away from me. So what happened was, after explaining to my friend what had been going on, this thing followed me for about a month. But it would gently, like, tap on my window. It would gently tap on my car, but very gently. And finally, the energy dissipated, and it never came back after about a month, month and a week or so. So I believe in the power of prayer, and I believe that there are multi-dimensions, and sometimes these energy forces cross over. And what their purpose is, I don't know. But I think being around that old haunted warehouse, which was, according to the people that worked there, there's no doubt about it, there were spirits that manifested and scared people, including men, where they would run out of the building. I think I picked that thing up from being around that building.
That's probably true. Now, what about prayer, Logan, in terms of chasing them away? Why does it seem to work?
Well, you know, a lot of the time, prayer can actually drive away negative energy and negative forces. But I think also it kind of lets them know that you don't want them around, or you want them to leave you alone. And you know, I think that it has a very powerful effect. And you know, really.
It works. We know that.
It does work. And, you know, but a lot of times it doesn't work right away, you know. And a lot of times I've heard people tell me that it would lead to other things happening, and it would increase, or it would be something else. So, but it does work. And, you know, if it works, great. I definitely don't see any problem with that. We at one point several years ago, we had some people that would do prayer before and after the investigations for, you know, for safety and you know, for you know, blessings and things of that nature. So yeah, I do believe that it works.
We've got Phil now in Illinois. Welcome to the program, Phil. Go ahead.
Good morning, George, Logan. How are you guys doing?
Morning. Good. Thank you. Good.
I've been ghost hunting for over 10 years, and I formed my own group in the last 7-8 years, and it's called PC Paranormal Investigations. And we were at Ashbury's Coffee House in Willow Springs, and I was talking to the owner, and she told me that the forest preserve behind there is haunted. So I took my investigation team there, and I'm doing EVP, and I'm doing photos. Well, one odd thing was, as I'm taking a photo in the same spot, there was a, like, it looked like a wolf's head with red eyes glowing and a snout in the photo. Then I started doing something you're not supposed to do. I started antagonizing, and then I felt like a scratch or a touch at my shirt, but it was cool out. It was like fall, but the foliage was still out. So then I didn't think nothing of it. So then it happened again. I said, it's real. Then I just felt that there was a little girl ghost or a child there. I said, hey, if you want to come home with me, I have kids. You want to come play? So that night, I wake up and I see a little child at the foot of my bed. I said, hey, it's not my son. He doesn't wear a dress. So he was wearing a dress, glowing blue with long hair. And then that same month, twice, my son saw the little girl ghost in his closet. But on the same investigation, we're walking around the woods, and then we found a path to get into the, we found a path off the trail, so we started going into the wooded part where there's no path, no pathways, and then I started getting drawn to my right. Another investigator was getting drawn to the left, like we're getting pulled apart, and then the two girls investigators stood behind us, and we heard a scream. We come back right away, and she had three imprints of teeth marks on her forearm, inside forearm, where the skin's more tender. And then the jump off the that investigation, there was one other one that's very unbelievable. It was me and a friend at a warehouse. And I took an analog cassette tape recorder, and I just placed it with a 60-minute tape on her. And I would do that here and there during investigations. And I brought it back. We reviewed it. I got three screams consecutively, like how would I say, segmented, where it's quiet, medium, and then right on the recorder of a woman screaming.
That's chilling.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable. And I still have it marked on that tape, and it's just in the recorder set already for somebody to listen to. It's unbelievable.
What do you think of EVPs, Logan, in terms of why they occur?
Well, you know, as far as why, you know, they occur, I think it's just, you know, we're unable to hear them when they're talking or yelling or things of that nature. And so I think sometimes it could be that they're trying to communicate and we're able to pick up, you know, the voices and things of that nature. You were talking about the screaming on the recorder, and a lot of the times, you know, depending on I think the distance and things and the recorder, sometimes you can pick it up on many different levels. But I've gotten some pretty eerie ones like that too with the Sally House, and it's pretty frightening. But I think for the most part it's just, you know, we're picking up what we can hear.
Do we have time for another call? No, let's just wait a little bit and have you tell us where to get the book, Logan.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, you can get the book through Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com, and you can also go through the publisher directly, Llewellyn, and get your copy today.
And you're writing another one, I guess.
Yeah, this is actually the opening book. It's going to be a series. I'm going to write a total of 12. So book two is just about done, and it's going to be on its way soon, hopefully.
Good for you. We're going to come back and take final phone calls in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Logan Corelli with us, of course. Our final segment, we'll get to your calls as well here. Logan, when you plan a ghost hunt trip, do you bring special equipment?
I would really say special equipment. Typically just what we use on any other case. So, and of course, you know, with all the new developments in technology, and I know a few inventors that's made some really amazing devices and things for us to use. But most of the time, it's pretty much the standard equipment, audio, video, you know, we do energy meters and things of that nature. But nothing I would say really special.
And it's not expensive then, is it?
No, not really expensive. I mean, some things, depending on, you know, how fancy you want to get. I mean, there's some devices out there that can do some pretty incredible things. And, you know, you can pay anywhere from $100 to, you know, over $1,000. I mean, depending on really what you're wanting to do. But most of the time, no, it's nothing I would say that's really expensive, and but it's not something that you're going to go out and get all of right away. You know, you may get a couple of pieces here and some there, and you know, over time you just kind of end up with quite a collection of different things to use.
As we get into final calls here, tell us about the murder house that you investigated.
The Villisca murder house.
Yeah.
Well, I had first. You know,
and where is that?
Villisca. It's actually in southwestern Iowa.
Okay.
Little small town in the corner of the state. Nobody would really know it was there, you know, if you weren't really looking for it. But I found out about it several years, over 10 years ago, and ended up going there numerous times. And, you know, eight people were murdered there with an axe over 100 years ago, and it was an unsolved case.
Oh, geez. All at one time?
All at one time, yeah. And six of them were children.
Ugh.
So, you know, you had two adults, you had their four children, then you had two guest children that were staying in the house that night that were all murdered, you know, the same night. And so there's been a lot of rumors and things, and people have had experiences, and they kind of attribute it to the victims as well as the killer. You know, a lot of people feel that there's a negative presence in the house as well at times. And so, of course, it was definitely a big hot spot to really travel to, and really got some good evidence out of there. And all the times that I've gone, I got a picture of what appeared to be a child's face in the window that we had got. We had had a lot of things that had moved in the house. Meters had gone off. We were setting up cameras in the upstairs room where the children were killed, in the kids' room, and we had a ball shoot out from under the bed, and like someone had thrown it. And it really kind of startled us, because I thought someone was like under the bed, you know, hiding and stuff.
Oh, geez.
And you know, later that night, one of my colleagues was sleeping on the floor, and he had actually turned on his side, which would put him facing under the bed, and he said a little girl came out of the darkness toward him, and he just screamed. You know, I heard him from downstairs, because I was sleeping in the guest bedroom downstairs. And just shook the whole house, because he jumped, and it really frightened him, you know. But one thing about the Villisca house, for me personally, and this is just me, that was one of the places I had kind of a bizarre effect on me. I had, you know, there were times when, you know, I'd wake up in different areas of the house, like sleepwalking, you know. And I'm not a big walker, you know. I sleep pretty good. But something was almost like communicating with me when I was asleep, and a couple of people that were there were kind of worried that I could have been semi-possessed, you know, maybe going out to get the axe or something.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of strange phenomena in the house. Had an ironing board fly off the wall towards one of my investigators. Got that on video.
So, and, was it like aimed to hurt the guy?
Actually, it was a her, but
her.
Yeah. I don't know that it was directly aimed. She might have just been in, you know, the line of fire type of thing.
Right.
But it was so quick and just sudden. And the thing about it was, you know, it wasn't like the thing could have fallen, because it was actually on hooks. So it would have had to have been lifted off the hooks and then thrown.
Well, who's doing the haunting in something like that, Logan? The dead people who were generally, as you said, most of them were kids, or the killer who eventually died?
Well, most of the negative sensations and the negative presence is mostly felt upstairs. There's a couple of areas up there. There's been theories that the killer had waited in one of the room upstairs, you know, till they had gone to bed to kill everybody. And I don't, you know, of course, we don't know if that's valid or not. But, you know, you do get a lot of communication with the kids. The kids is a big thing there. A lot of child. There's a door upstairs that moves. You can play ball with them at times. The girls that were murdered and downstairs had a lot of things in their room and communication. We got an EVP, in fact, of a child talking the first time we were there. That said tonight or something like that. So it's almost like you have multiple spirits that are haunting one location at the time.
All right.
At one time.
Let's go to the phones for you.
Sure.
Let's go to Alexander driving in Louisiana. Alexander, go ahead, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen. Logan, George, good show tonight.
Hi there.
Hi. Home state.
I had an experience where I lived alone, you know, before I settled down and all that good stuff, where it happened a few times in the middle of the night. I would have the sleep paralysis situation go on, and there would be this shadow thing grabbing like my shirt and like just, you know, leering into my face. And the only thing I could ask it was, "Who are you?" And it happened like twice. It was like so bad that, you know, it felt so real that it inspired me to write, you know, a book based off of it, or whatever, which I won't plug on here, which is kind of inappropriate, but it made me move out of the apartment pretty much. I was just so freaked out about it. And I guess my question to you, Logan, was, have you ever had any experiences with shadow people? And if you have or whatnot, what do you think they are and where they come from?
I've had multiple experiences with shadow phenomenon. One of the places, the church that I was talking about earlier, where I was actually hit and things, there were multiple that would go around, you know, the structure and go around in a circle. And, you know, I've even seen some in my home and some of the other places that I have been. But really, I don't know specifically what they are. A lot of people attribute them to negative entities, dark entities, and things like that. And I don't feel that that's necessarily the case.
I think they're coming from another dimension. They leak through.
You know, and it's just one of the things that kind of contributes to, you know, to the haunting. And a lot of people theorize that, you know, it's an issue of light, that they appear as shadows because they don't have the energy to fully manifest into what we call an apparition, or you know, maybe it's just something that our eyes can see them in a certain way to where, you know, they appear to be a black figure or a black shadow. The first, I would say, figure I ever saw, even when I was a kid, my first experience, I saw a shadow silhouette on a wall of a hotel that literally chased me down the hall all the way back to my room, and it had dissipated. So, and that was clear as day. That was a perfectly lined silhouette of what I perceived to be a man.
Man, you've gone through all kinds of things, haven't you?
Yeah.
You really have. Let's go to Gail in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Gail, go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Norrie.
Hi there.
And Mr. Logan.
Hi.
First of all, thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Can you hear me okay?
Uh-huh. I think so.
Okay, I have a story that's real. It happened to me about 30 years ago and still gives me goosebumps to this day. I was living in Florida at the time. Had to go to Tampa on some business with my husband, and we were there for just the whole day and had to go to a bookshop, particular type of bookshop, to exchange some books, and was told by the son of the people that ran it about a house that was haunted. So we decided to go check it out, and you could tell from just getting up to the property that there was something weird about the house. And this kid told me a story about how some teenagers from school went on a dare to go into the house because it was haunted. And there were several girls and a couple of guys. Well, when they came out, one of the girls was missing. And it was reported that she never came back from the house. And I was looking at this house from the corner of the property, like where the sidewalk was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as if I could see inside the house. and it had a first floor and a second floor and a basement. And I could see in the basement where this girl had been, and there had been a satanic ritual carried out there involving this young girl. And I don't want to mention any names of any groups or anything, but I knew who had done it. And, you know, because the signatures were still there.
Yeah.
And I believe what I saw was a portal. And I think she had been taken through the portal, if that was possible. And I went home, and I had the weirdest sensation that something was sitting on top of my head. I had such pain in my head for 2 full days until it disappeared. So I have a couple of questions. First of all, is it possible that her spirit or her being could have been taken through that portal?
Let's go with that one first, Logan. It's possible, isn't it?
I would say it's possible, you know, but how you would validate that, I'm not exactly sure.
Good point.
But then the next question is, you know, what happened following that, you know, which in itself is a mystery.
Yeah. And the second question I have is, have you ever seen a portal? Because what I saw was like, it was like a doorway. And it has, like, bluish electricity, like, inside the area. And it was like you could pass through it.
Have you ever seen a portal before, Logan?
Not myself. I did work with somebody that did, though. And he had described a very large opening with almost like a swirling energy type manifestation around it, but I myself, no, I have not physically witnessed a portal. No.
Who would want to see one like that? Right. Let's go to our first time caller, Zoe in Mechanicville, New York. Hi, Zoe. Go ahead.
Hi. How's it going?
Okay, Zoe. Good.
Thank you, guys. I want to really thank you for actually putting the show on and actually making me feel comfortable of coming out and saying things that I don't feel comfortable even talking to my husband about. So, thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I deliver the newspapers at night and I clean all night long, so I listen to you guys all night long. So tonight, actually, I had something very weird happen to me.
What happened?
It's been happening, and now that I'm thinking of it, listening to you guys, it's happened to me over and over and over again. And I'm thinking that it's back to my childhood, but tonight when I was delivering newspapers, I went to go throw a newspaper up to somebody's house, and it's kind of next to the woods. I live next to a battlefield, one of the oldest places, I guess, in the United States.
Uh-huh.
And I was looking into the woods, and all of a sudden, at the line of it, I seen, I don't know if it was an extraterrestrial or if it was a being or something, I don't know, but I always get this feeling that something's following me, and this stared at me for 5 minutes, and we were just staring at each other. It was tall, very tall, almost like went into like nothing. And it just stared at me. And all of a sudden, it just walked away. And like...
Did it look human?
It almost looked human. It had arms. It had legs. But it was very tall. And I'm not sure what it was.
You don't think
don't
it
really
was like
care
a Bigfoot?
What it was.
You don't think it was like a Bigfoot, though, do you?
No, gosh, no, no. It was a shadow. Like one of your callers just called in and said, shadow people.
More like a shadow person. Only have about 30 seconds left here, Logan. But, you know, these creatures seem to be everywhere, don't they?
They do. In fact, one of the strangest things that I've physically seen was a shadow that manifested into a bird-like entity and flew straight up into the air, kicked up the dust as it flew in the air. And those are kind of associated with guardians and protectors and things like that. So, you know, it could have been something with the area you know, that you were in that just happened to be watching you.
It could have been. Logan, thanks for being on the program. Good luck with the Haunted Heart of America, and let us know when the next editions are done, okay?
I will definitely do that. Thank you.
Okay, it's good to have you on the program. Always good to have a new guest, first-time guest, and a very efficient ghost investigator. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.